Good day, everybody, and welcome to the Michael and Patty Show, where it's everything about living in Prince Edward Island, real estate, and just about anything else we can come up with that pertains to our lovely East Coast Canada island. Today, we're going to do another week in the life of a real estate agent and cover a whole pile of little topics that we go through on a weekly basis. There's some interesting stuff here, and then we're going to end with the statistics briefly, just covering what's happening in the PEI real estate market. Good day, Patty, and what do you think of the Charlottetown waterfront today?
It's absolutely beautiful down at the waterfront today in Charlottetown.
So much so we have an RV parked beside us that's sleeping here overnight.
Yes. They should know we have this booked every Sunday for our recording studio, but yes. That's okay. We'll share it this week.
We've had to move the truck 50 feet to the east, to the west. Today, we're going to talk about the secret formula to determine the value of a waterfront property, may be it a waterfront lot or acreage. Do you know the secret formula?
Now I'm interested to hear what your secret formula is.
There is no secret formula. At one point, I was representing pretty well 100% waterfront buyers, and I had people, I had one guy who was a rocket scientist, another guy who was a mathematical genius, and they all tried to come up with these equations to say, well, this property should be worth this because it's X amount of dollars per acre or X number of dollars per foot on the water or whatever the case may be. There is no mathematical equation. So recently, I had someone looking to list a waterfront acreage. It was in and around 30 acres, and they had an appraisal done. And the appraiser came up with a number. Now, these vendors, like most vendors or owners of property, want to see as much money as they can out of this property. So they basically instructed the appraiser to pump that number up as high as possible within the data set or the information that he has available on the island. Now, appraisers do an excellent job pretty well all of the time that I've seen, but they also have a certain latitude. They're working with sales data. And when you get outside of Summerside, Charlottetown, Stratford, Cornwall, in the rural areas, you're dealing with a data set that is all over the place, plus it's a very thin data set. And this will be reflected in the statistics that we're going to address at the end of this podcast. So essentially what this appraiser did, and preemptively I'll say, when I looked at this property, I figured you're in and around 200,000, just going by experience. He found three sales that were in and around 220 to 265. But what he did is he applied a value of $11,500 per acre. Would you say that was insane or really insane?
Really insane.
That number is not a number that anyone would go by, but this particular data set that the appraiser took, which was from all over the island, disregarding location, came up with a number of $11,500 per acre. And then what he did is he calculated how many feet or inches of waterfront there was. So he came up with these two equations and then assigned a value that was basically double what the actual fair market value. But because the data set was there for its use, he was able to use that. Now, in all fairness to the appraiser, he did say in the appraisal that these other properties are in better locations. And I certainly didn't mention to the sellers, because I represent the sellers and you want to present the property in the best light that you possibly can, that this area that this land is in is not the greatest location on the island. The point to this is there is no equation for acreage or how many feet are on the water, because the numbers are all over the place. And the reason that is because people are buying these properties on emotion. They're looking at them, they're walking on the beach, they fall in love with them, and they cut a check. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, they come on holidays and because they fall in love with the experience on PEI, and rightfully so. It's an absolutely beautiful place to live. They do purchase on emotion, and typically from a real estate perspective, once they go home, they get back into their routine. If they never purchase while they're here, there's a good chance they're not purchasing that year. You'll have to wait till their next trip, many cases.
But mainly the valuation is sort of a second thought, because they can't, it's very difficult to put a value on 30 acres of property that's selling for $200,000 when there's a waterfront lot next to it that's sold for $99,000 that is a quarter of an acre.
Yeah, but there's other variables that come into play. What kind of land is there? There's so much involved that people don't realize just because there's 40 acres or, say, 1 acre lot on the water, is the land wetland? Is it fully treed? Does it have, you know, scrap softwood? Has it been...
Where's the water table? How does it percolate? What's the bug factor? Bugs, mosquitoes, and black flies can be an issue in PEI just like anywhere else.
I agree.
Moving along. Secondly, I got a phone call and multiple emails and texts from a particular person that was inquiring on a property I've listed. And after answering about 25 questions, he says to me, "Oh, you're the listing agent. I have my own agent, so he's going to arrange a showing," which to me struck me as rather odd, because this information was disclosed after the fact. And all I could think to myself is, well, if you have an agent and you're working with an agent, be loyal to that agent, work through that agent, allow that agent to ask the questions and get the answers, because that agent probably knows a lot more than you do, if you're not active in PEI real estate, about the questions and how he can further ask more questions about the questions and determine whether the answers to those questions are legitimate or whether other questions he or she may want to ask based on the scenario. Wouldn't you say that?
Absolutely. And when you call the listing agent, most listing realtors understand and know what questions to ask that buyer inquiring, which the number one question that any listing agent should and probably does ask an inquiry on a property is, what's your motivation to purchase this property? They may not ask in that exact sentence phrasing, but that's what they're trying to determine. Now, that same buyer ends up disclosing through the conversation, and whether it's a day or it's over the course of a week or so, trying to get as much information about the property as possible. Next thing you know, they end up disclosing, like this situation, Michael, that they already have a realtor representing them. Well, guess what? You are equipped, hopefully, with information now to better service and support your seller, because you know this individual's motivation. You'll be able to negotiate from a stronger position and advise your clients better. So it's just not good practice for a buyer to contact a listing agent if they already have a realtor and think they're doing themselves a service.
Oh, absolutely. In this particular case, I think the potential purchaser just wanted to run through the house real quick. And I said to him, and this will lead into one of our other subjects, in this particular case, it was about location. We'll cover that just coming up. Next, we're going to go to vacation properties, showings, listing, and possession dates. If you have a vacation property that you may use in the summertime, a lot of people, and it's rented out, a lot of owners feel, well, we can't list it until the fall, or we'll list it in January. The fact is, these vacation properties are transacting all the time, and most of them are going to sell between the spring and the fall. There's all kinds of activity between the fall and the spring, and you'll probably end up with more money. It will just take longer to sell, as our studies have shown in the past. But I don't want you to be hesitant when you're selling a vacation property, because the showings are all controlled. And if it is rented out or you're in that vacation property, the showings could only happen when it's being flipped or cleaned. So if you have a cleaning time between 10 and 2, let's say, you could arrange all the showings to happen between 1 and 2. That way, you know, the property's pretty well cleaned. They can go through it quick and then on with your day. As far as the possession date is concerned, because this is the other objection I get all the time, is, well, we don't want to sell our cottage now because we don't want to move in the middle of summer. On the listing, it indicates what your preferred possession date or time is. So if you're selling a cottage and you don't want to move out until the end of September, don't accept an offer that forces you to do so. Would you agree?
No, I agree. And further on that, if you're looking to sell your cottage and you're questioning the timing of it, and you've been advised whether you brought it on during the summer months or in the fall months, before you winterize and shut it down, I would just strongly advise, and I know we discussed this on a previous podcast, Michael, just get your water test done, again, by a third party who doesn't have a vested interest. Again, another podcast that we already had this conversation, but get your water test done so that it's not a big issue and a big stress that suddenly, because what I typically find happens is as soon as Christmas is over, people start dreaming about their summer vacation. It's winter, they're stuck indoors, which is when we get a lot of emails asking us about properties. I'd like more information. It's because now they're done with their family, dinner's over, they've got the laptop open, and they're starting to dream of summer vacation. So there are quite a few cottages that sell over the winter months because of that case scenario that I've just explained and outlined. So if you have your water test, it's not a stress or concern that you have to dewinterize the house in February or March. You have to try to get a plumber out there, and just something that I advise my clients preemptively to get done or have completed before they winterize their home, their cottage.
Absolutely. On to the subject that you brought up this morning. Let's talk about your acquaintance listing his house or property with a buddy, and then he ended up doing his own video, and then we'll talk about the different usages of video and by whom they should be done.
Yes, well, I stumbled across a mutual acquaintance, I will say, of yours and mine, Michael, and they have, yes, the property listed, yes, it's with a realtor. I checked it. There is no professional video or anything done, so this seller is out there trying to do their own property video walkthrough of their home to try to sell it. And I was listening to the descriptive, the narrative that this seller is providing, outlining things that, again, may be important to him, but possibly shouldn't have been said, did not need to be stated throughout the narrative of him showing the property. It's unfortunate that he felt he had to do that himself. That is a service that should be provided.
I think the main point of contention that I would have from a marketing perspective is the fact that, number one, your owner of the house shouldn't be doing the video because they don't know what the market, the purchasers, are typically looking for. They're going to highlight things that could be negatives to the purchaser, and the positives they just don't even mention. That's the number one thing. It's just like showing your house to a potential purchaser if you're the owner. A lot of times that doesn't work out for the most part statistically. Video should be done by people that do real estate videos and know how to do them. And secondly, videos are pointless unless you have any distribution. You know, you look at YouTube and you look at real estate markets and you see a video that was done 9 months ago and they have two views, the real estate agent and the administrator of the real estate agent. That's not going to sell the property. The first thing you should probably look at is the amount of subscribers they have. If they have thousands of subscribers, good sign. If they have 200, not a good sign. If they have videos of properties that have been on the market for a year that have 12 views, that's not a good sign. So get your video done by someone that does real estate videos. If the real estate agent is going to be in it, chances are he or she probably knows what to say and what highlights people are looking at or looking for based on showing hundreds or thousands of houses in their past or their experience. Now, video, I use video all the time. My YouTube channel is great fun. Patty has a YouTube channel as well. They share a lot of properties and other stuff and just PEI in general. But it's just not for featuring properties. Video can be used for a lot of stuff. For instance, I have a property that's down a questionable clay road. I will do a video of that road. I will do a video of me walking through the whole house with an action cam strapped to me. So they get what I refer to as a candid video, just like they're at the house. And a lot of times they're compelled to make an offer based on that video, knowing that nothing is hidden. because you're not going to be able to cover a whole house in 2 or 3 minutes, which is what a standard real estate video is. The other thing video can be used for, like we did with the gentleman a few days ago, ended up getting bit about 14 times by black flies while doing it, as we did a quick run through of a house he hadn't seen that he owns. He hadn't been there in years. So it just gave him an opportunity to see what the house looks like today and the structures around it, some of which now are non-existent.
Which assisted yourself too, Michael, in helping him understand why maybe the evaluation of the property was where it is, because in his mind, he may have still had it viewed as this little palace. And here, you know, there may have been some deficiencies, some maintenance that
are you referring to the shovel that someone threw through the window? Yes, definite deficiency. Next, we're going to talk about location. So that video should give you a pretty good idea of what you're looking at. And if you do drone video, that as well. If location is the number one thing on your list, for instance, someone asked me for that nice beach house, but the main priority was the beach, being able to walk down to a nice white sandy beach. It's hard to find that in PEI. And when you do, it may or may not be up to your expectations, like some of the beaches you see on the planet. So if location is the number one thing, don't waste the listing agent's time by setting up a showing at a property that you haven't even driven by or walked on the beach. Or Patty and I are looking at a house later today. We've driven by it. We know the location. The worst thing you can ever do is look at a house and then report back to the listing agent and say, well, they don't like the location. Some of these vendors spend hours, days, a week preparing that house. They move schedules around. They have to vacate the home. Maybe they have pets or kids or other stuff going on. When you book a showing, the vendors are assuming you're a qualified buyer that has your financing or cash in place, not a looky-loo that doesn't even know where the property is located. Because when that listing agent reports back to the vendor and says they don't like the location, the response isn't great, and I've seen agents lose listings over this commentary.
Absolutely, and there's so much technology available to us today that even if a potential buyer is off island and they're traveling and they're only going to be here, because this is what typically happens, they're only here Saturday, Sunday, and they want to get in and see this property, you could still do Google Street View. There's still many options available to be able to look at. There's government sites that allow aerial views, so you can kind of get a bit of an idea of what's around that property. So I agree, it's not a valid reasoning for to not be interested, and it's a huge disruption to sellers. Don't like the location, don't like the setting, don't like the look of the neighbor's house. These are all things that I've heard in the past.
So view the property in person or virtually, and there's a ton of mapping links on my website under the links button at the top, and Patty's got a bunch of resources on her site as well. Next, I had somebody call me that just wanted me to consult them on the purchase of a piece of land. I had nothing to do with the transaction. They were dealing directly with the listing agent, which is fine and dandy. And they were trying to get a building permit, and they sent me what they were told is a survey. I looked at the survey. The government looked at the survey. We both came to the same conclusion and said, this isn't a survey. This is a survey of the neighbor's house. It's actually a plot plan, which includes the structures. But it's not a survey of the property they were purchasing. This was a new agent, and she put in the offer, vendor to supply survey if applicable. What does that mean?
And if applicable, if available, I believe is how our clause is written. So if they wrote if applicable to who? Applicable to this buyer because they want it? Applicable that the seller actually had one done when they purchased the property or acquired it? It makes no sense.
If I'm buying a property, I want a survey. So either you have the survey or you don't. And if you don't even know what a survey looks like, you probably should go back to education, real estate education classes, wouldn't you say?
I would say.
So in this particular case, the listing agent didn't know if they had a survey. Well, they kind of had a survey. Turns out the property hasn't been surveyed since 1975, and no one has the survey. So at this point, at least from a purchaser's aspect, you know, there's no survey. Just tell us there's no survey. If they knew that, they would have just put in there vendor to supply a survey, or they would have to pay for the survey themselves. But at least they would have known at that point, and it wouldn't have turned into a week of analysis paralysis and a purchase and sale that says survey to be provided if applicable, which means nothing.
Yeah, and a frustrated buyer through the process.
Totally frustrated. That's why they called me to consult them, even though I had nothing to do with this transaction whatsoever. But I did look at the documents, and the good news is they've been able to pull this all together. But if you're listing a property, as a listing agent, you should know what a survey looks like. And the other thing is they had bales of hay on two of the markers. So even though the markers were there from 1975, there was bales of hay on them, so they couldn't even locate where the corners of where the property is. Wouldn't it be prudent to sort of move those over?
I would say.
Exactly. Next, micromanaging your listing agent. One of my favorite subjects. I had a property I'm listing this week, and right off the bat, I get a long email of how they want it marketed and where they want it marketed, and we want it put here, there, and everywhere. And I'm looking at this list, and I'm thinking, this is what Patty and I do for a living. This is all we've done for approximately 40 years, full-time, 7 days a week, in Prince Edward Island, not Ontario or BC, but in PEI. We do nothing every day, 24 hours a day, less sleep, but think of ways to market your property, and we try everything. The last thing we want is a listing sitting on the shelf, not selling. So we have tried absolutely everything. We know what's going to work, but we know what's not going to work. And what is typically going to work with any product anywhere is know your demographic. Know that if I am selling a house in Charlottetown or Summerside, know who your buyer is. Know where they're located. If they're in Ontario, chances are they're not in Sudbury. Chances are they're somewhere from Burlington, Oshawa, Whitby, Markham, Richmond Hill, or over to Ottawa. Our studies show that. These particular vendors wanted marketing in Alberta and Winnipeg and who knows where else, Dubai, Saudi Arabia. These are not places that are buying properties. When you spend money on marketing, the objective is to get as much of a return on that investment as you possibly can based on your demographic research. The point I'm making is if you think you can do a better job marketing your property, don't even hire a listing agent if you're going to try to micromanage them, because it just drives them crazy. And some agents can't control their clients. And in one particular case Patty was telling me about, and she can share this, the client texted the agent 17 to 20 times in one day.
That's pretty much a consistent day, unfortunately. And yes, I completely agree with everything you said. It is hard when a seller, and I typically find this with private sellers who have the mindset that they need to control the situation, they feel they need to be so invested and involved in the whole process that they try to micromanage their listing agent, the realtor, and all they're doing is taking away the realtor's time from responding to leads and doing additional marketing and trying to get it out there, because you're too busy babysitting the seller to try pacifying them that, yes, I hear this. Yes, I understand that. Yes, I know this. Yes, we can try that. Yes, and that's all they're doing. They're just trying to keep the listing, and hopefully they pacify that seller long enough that whatever they are able to find time to do generates a buyer so that they can get the property sold and closed and enjoy all the free time they have on the other side of the sale day.
Oh, absolutely. And as we said in the previous podcast, and Patty pointed out, there's a book written about this. If you're hiring an experienced agent that has 10,000 hours of experience, and in my opinion, 1,000 transactions, listings and or sales, they should be marketing that property to its full potential, and they probably are. There's no need to micromanage them. Next, I'm seeing this a lot on offers. I'm seeing agents write offers subject to building permits, and they're putting the timeline for the building permit out 10 days, 14 days. And I know full well that it's extremely unlikely that they're ever going to get their building permit in place, especially if it requires a PERC test, which it probably does, inside of 10 to 14 days in the peak time of the year. The typical mindset, I feel, in my experience, has been when you're dealing with local buyers, is they figure, oh, we'll just get an extension. We'll just get an extension. We'll just get an extension. So this particular deal, they've extended the financing once, and it was granted only because it fell within the confines of the building permit stipulation. However, the building permit is coming up, and little does the purchaser know that I have another buyer for not just this property, but other properties around it, but we need to get this deal off the table. So if they're going to ask for an extension at that point, it's not going to be granted unless they remove that condition. Otherwise, it's dead in the water, and it wouldn't have been if they would have just called Access PEI, talked to the building department, and got a realistic expectation of how long it's going to take to get that building permit.
I see it all the time, Michael.
Do you?
Yes, they will put in a short period, and as a listing agent, I am not going to say anything to, unfortunately, educate or inform. What do I know? Maybe perhaps that buyer just wants to call and ask a couple questions, and that's why they put such a tight timeline for a building permit application. It better suits my seller if this person's going to remove the condition within 2 weeks instead of dragging it out.
I wrote an offer yesterday on a piece of land. We talked to Access PEI. Access PEI said it was going to take us almost a month and a half, maybe a little bit more, to get that building permit in place. I knew that the vendor would only focus on the price, and that's what they did. And everything else we asked for, we got approved. We didn't get the price approved. We were off by a few dollars. But the vendor typically will focus on price. So if you're asking for a building permit that might be a month, month and a half, a lot of times they'll miss that. Have you found that?
Yes, I would agree.
So put it in there after you're educated and the government tells you what a realistic expectation may be. If you can't meet that deadline, you could put in there at the sole discretion of the purchasers that the building permit could be extended by 30 days for a maximum of 3 or 4 times. You know, you can write it a bunch of different ways, but just make sure that you have the ability to keep in contract and not have the expectation that the vendors are going to continue to expand that date or extend it.
Yes, and just on that, just because we just dealt with this in the last week or two at my office, just because there's a building permit condition within the contract doesn't mean that the buyer is forced to have to do a building permit or submit a building permit application. That clause can be waived solely at the buyer's sole option and discretion. So I've had sellers in the past say, well, I want to see the rejection. And they don't have to provide a rejection because they can waive it at their sole option. And that's what the way the clause is written. So just know that the buyer is not forced to, but it does allow them to make sure highway and transportation, they can get access. If they want to do a PERC test, if they want to submit a formal building permit, that's what that whole condition within our contract agreement encompasses, is all of that.
In addition to that, anytime the vendor, or I should say the purchaser, acquires documents, whether it's getting a roof done or basement cleaned or steam cleaned or mold removed, and they receive invoices or documents pertaining to that operation, those documents may be the property of that purchaser, and they may not have to share them unless it's explicitly written in the contract.
Yeah, good point.
And I've ran into that before where purchasers say, I want to see the receipt for X. And the lawyers are like, no, they own that receipt and we're not willing to give it up. And the deal closed. Next is not harassing your agent when you've overpriced your property. Patty and I, or at least me, we'll see if you do this.
Okay.
I will spend, whether it's an hour, a week, or 6 months, going through market data with my vendors, owners, to show them what the marketing's doing and illustrating the market data. So where the market, it's not me, it's not Patty, it's not your agent, or most agents, that are coming up with the price and the property. It's the market. And if you're going to be overpriced because you don't care if it ever sells, don't spend your time harassing the agent when you're in the market for 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 years.
I agree. I send an email after it's obviously a discussion and conversation, but I outline it just so that I can reference that email throughout exactly what you're, you know, referring to. The seller contacts you and says, what's going on? What's going on? Why hasn't it sold? I'm able to say, well, remember back when we first met and that email on such and such a date, here's where I said the market, again, it's my interpretation of the data. And based on my professional opinion, this is where the data is saying that your property needs to be placed. Sellers always say, and I know we've covered this before, I can always go down, but I can't go back up. Well, you're putting yourself into a bit of a limbo area, and by how much you overprice the property will determine how many views, how much activity you get, if you get any activity or offers, and how much time. One thing that you were saying, Michael, it's not that a seller doesn't care about necessarily ever selling their property unless it's a separation and they are just honestly not caring about selling the property. They'd rather stay in there as long as they possibly can. But it depends on what the person's motivation is. They may have a bunch of credit card debt and, you know, expenses, and they need X amount of dollars to clear their life, and they are going to hold out. If their motivation is price, well, then it's going to take a lot longer period of time to sell it.
And you touched on something interesting there. It is not the job or the position of the purchaser to make sure that you're covering the cost of your inflated mortgage for a house you paid too much for, plus your student loans, your credit card debt, and the 2 cars you just leased.
Absolutely.
That does not affect the market value of the house. Now, when you are establishing an asking price, there's not just one price. When you get an appraisal done, they typically, for the banks, they refer to a 90-day sale price. So they want the house sold within 3 months so they're not sitting on it into perpetuity. You can decide how long it's going to take that house to sell based on the market data. So the price of selling a house in 2 days is different than 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, or 5 years. And yes, it can take a very long time to sell a house in PEI sometimes, especially if it's undermarketed, the vendor's doing the video pointing out a bunch of negatives, and no one sees the properties even available.
And I think this is a perfect segue into the last topic.
Now, this last topic, it's always debatable whether we want to do this, because sometimes it's just really boring, but some people are into this stuff. I'm going to let you go through
just a quick summary.
The latest stats. Keep in mind this podcast is delayed by sometimes a few weeks or a month, but this is for June 2024. If you do want stats that are updated, I do tweet or X them out in the form of a message. I also send them out of my newsletter, and I know Patty does from time to time as well.
Yes, we do.
Here's the stats, and it's been sort of the same story all year,
yeah.
But it's even more grim in June.
Yes, this time of year. So June, what this does is it compares June 2024 to June 2023. Home sales are down by 22.2%. So when you're talking about pricing and how much time, you need to be aware of this. So home sales are down. We are currently in what we call a balanced market. So it doesn't favor the buyer nor the seller. We've been in this market for at least a year and a half, I believe, now. All of 2023 and now the first half of 2024, which is not common. We usually are between the buyers or sellers, but this balanced market, we just seem to be lingering in, and it's probably recovering from COVID and a whole bunch of variables. Even new listings are down. They're down by 6.5% from June 2024, comparing from June 2023 to June 2024. And our benchmark pricing is also down by 1.2%. So the average price this year is $358,900.
For an average house.
For an average house on PEI tip to tip. And last year, it was $363,300. So not a significant decrease, but definitely a decrease. So if you purchased your property last year, and for whatever reason you need to sell it this year, and you're hoping you're going to get your closing costs and legal fees and everything covered and put that on top of whatever you purchased it for, It's probably going to take a little bit to end up selling that property for what you're looking for. So those are the stats. Anything else, Michael?
When viewing stats and PEI, the numbers are pretty thin. I mean, sometimes we're looking at sales data from 20 houses over the last 2 years. This isn't a big city. And the stats can be interpreted differently for different areas. The western portion of the island will perform differently than the eastern. Charlottetown will perform different from Summerside and Stratford. So sometimes it's a good idea to ask your agent for stats that pertain to that exact area.
Yeah.
And what you're buying, too. I mean, you're not looking at 30 acres of waterfront in Tignish. You're looking at a house that's a three-bedroom bungalow in Charlottetown. So look at those stats and sales.
Yeah, if they need to go hyper-local, whether it's to the community, the area, the city, the subdivision, if there's enough data and stats and they can really hyper-local focus in on that property and surrounding areas, great. Typically, like you're saying, we don't have the higher volumes like other places across Canada, so we do have to sometimes expand out to try finding comparables.
Awesome. We would really appreciate it if you liked this podcast and like the information in it, that you do give us some, give us a review, give us a star rating. And if you have any questions about Prince Edward Island in general or PEI real estate, shoot Patty or I a text or direct message us and we'll see if we can get that answered. In the meantime, have a great day. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye for now.